What number is this, Chip?
Episode 4, Mickey Dolenz's album, Remember.
Okay, no, I mean, don't get excited, man. It's because I'm short, I know.
You're listening to Zilch, a Monkeys podcast.
And we welcome you once again to Zilch, your Monkeys podcast. How's everybody doing tonight?
Great. It's great to be here.
It's great to be anywhere.
Absolutely. Especially here.
Yeah. Tonight, joining us is Craig Smith. Hey, what's up?
Hi, everybody. How you
hey,
doing?
What's shaking? Craig Cohen, how are you doing, sir?
I'm very good, Ken. Thanks, as always, for having me.
Jeff Hewlett.
Oh, fantastic. So happy to be here again.
Miss Sarah Clark, welcome to the roundtable. You finally made it to the big table here.
Yes, I did. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Right now, we're going to check out the Monkeys mailbag and check out listener responses.
P.O. Box 9847.
And of course, one of the best ways to get mentioned on the Zilch podcast is to rate us on iTunes, and we thank you so much for doing that. It really helps keep us up there. Ever since the show debuted, we have not been out of the top 20, and it's because of people like you giving us iTunes ratings, so please keep it up.
So awesome.
And people seem to like us, and I'm not sure why. Gonna read you some fan reaction here that we got. Nice first show. This is from Jazz for Jeff. He says, glad to hear people with intelligent commentary talk about the Monkees. And I'm trying to figure out what show he's listening to, but we thank you, Jeff, anyway. And Mr. William Bingle says, hey guys, great ideas. I've been in a Monkees cover band, The Drunkees, since 2001. He's going to turn all of them onto our podcast. So there's a Monkees cover band called The Drunkees out there, and they're going to be listening to us. So hi, everyone. Hi. Everyone wave. It's been very interesting. Some people are leaving such great commentaries as just Mr. Dabalina, Mr. Bob Dabalina. So there you go. To which someone responded, China Clipper calling Alameda. So you see how this goes. So anyway, we're glad for all the responses and all the great feedback we've been getting on iTunes and everywhere else. Before we get on to our discussion of Mickey Dolenz's album, Remember, I'd like to take a moment to discuss the loss of Peg McManus. God bless her. She was a big help in the Monkey community. She helped Maggie McManus put together the Monkey Business fanzine, and I know my wife was a big lover of that back in the day. This is way before there was an internet, back when it wasn't so easy to keep things going, where you had to go to the post office, you had to run those mimeograph machines, you had to do a lot of this stuff by hand. We don't realize how easy we have it. It's an amazing thing when you're part of a fanzine community, because you're kind of keeping things going and you're passing information around, and there's really no way to check into things, and you just hope that you're trying to keep this thing that you love alive. And in the spirit of those original fanzines, we hope that Zilch is now your new audio fanzine, and we appreciate all the web presences and all the different Facebook pages and monkey.net and monkeyconcerts.com and all these things. But there was a time when it was just these folks keeping things going, and God bless them. And we just want you to know that had you not done the work that you folks did back in the day, there would be a lot of holes that we now have information for, and we just want to thank you for all the hard work that you folks did. Author Fred Velez wrote something, and I'm going to have Sarah read part of that. It's published in his blog and on monkeys.net and on various Facebook pages, but we'd like to dedicate this episode to Peggy McManus and all the people who helped keep that information alive. Take it away, Sarah.
And this is from Fred Velez, and he wrote, it is with great sadness that I report that Maggie McManus's mother, Peg, passed away the morning of June 22nd, 2014. Peg was an integral part of the Monkees fan family, helping Maggie put together the Monkey Business fanzine, being involved in the early Monkees conventions, and helping to support the Monkees in all their endeavors. Peg was a lovely, sweet person, and the Monkees and the fans appreciated her. I last saw Peg when she accompanied Maggie to the Monkees' New Brunswick concert in 2012. Everyone who knew her loved her very much. My heart and condolences go out to Maggie at this time, and I pray the Lord will bring her comfort. Please keep Maggie in your thoughts and prayers. God bless you, Peg. We love you, and we'll miss you. And the same goes out from all of us at the Zilch Podcast.
And now back to monkeying around. Then and Now events present the Brady Bunch Convention, August 15th, 16th, and 17th. Join the Bradys for the grooviest convention to hit the East Coast. Cast members from the TV show, the movie, specials, and more. The biggest Brady event ever. See Barry Williams, Johnny Bravo it up live as he performs all the hits from the TV show. Not to be missed. At the Hilton Meadowlands, East Rutherford, New Jersey. August 15th, 16th, and 17th. For a complete list of guests and info, check out www.bradybunchconvention.com. And remember, have a sunshine day. Today's episode, we're going to look at Mickey Dolenz' album, Remember. What do you guys think of this one? Just an overview. Craig Cohen, your thoughts.
First of all, I want to thank you for introducing me to this album. It kind of slipped under my radar back when it came out a couple of years back. And as we saw that this was going to be something we covered, I was really, really happy to discover it. So thank you for introducing me to this great album. I really, really enjoy it. It is definitely a unique listen.
Jeff Hewlett.
I was genuinely surprised by this album. I went in with middling expectations, and I came out of my first listen very, very happy with what I heard. I think overall it's a great showcase for Mickey's voice and his talent. There are some really unique takes on a lot of the songs that are there, and I think hearing him go back and revisit some of the Monkey songs in a completely different way was really refreshing.
I would agree with that. Sarah Clark.
Well, I actually heard about this from his Facebook page. He was he put up a copy of the redone version of Randy Scouse Git right before the album came out, and as soon as I heard that, I knew I would have to check this out. I also kind of came in with middling expectations. I've not really loved a lot of Mickey's solo work in the past. I like it. I enjoy it for what it is, but it hasn't really grabbed me necessarily. I agree vocally. This is just, I think this is his best solo album. And there are songs that are better than others, but there's not really a dud anywhere on the album.
Well, I'm sure other people may have different thoughts on there being duds or not, but there are so many.
Well, there are ones that are not as good, but
yeah. But we'll get into that. We'll get into that. Craig Smith.
This is an album that I approached with trepidation. I'm not a big fan of the covers type of thing. Maybe even a lesser fan of reinterpreting songs that he did already with the Monkees. Having said that, it was a more enjoyable listen than I thought. That is not to say that I don't think it's somewhat flawed, but it is better than I thought it would be. I did enjoy it.
Very good. We'll talk a little bit about the cover. The cover's really nice. It comes in a cardboard-type cover, and it's got a little place for the CD, and it's got some really cool pictures of Mickey from the past, and there's a very cool booklet. Inside of the booklet is a tribute to Davy Jones, and a lot of great pictures, and basically just an overview of how the album was made and his thoughts on the album. So it's, as a package, it's very worth picking up. And there's a really strange picture of Mickey holding an acoustic guitar. He's wearing like one of those top hat fedora type things. And there's even a picture of him when he was in Circus Boy and stuff like that. So it's a really cool package, and it's nice. And it's great to see somebody still doing something at this point in the game. A lot of people are just foregoing the whole CD experience, and I'm glad to see that Mickey is not.
I want to begin by focusing on this new album, Remember, which is excellent, as I told you a moment ago. What prompted you to record this album?
Well, it was this producer that kept badgering me to record with him. And I kept putting it off, you know. We would talk, and he would call me, and he kept saying, "Oh, I really love your voice," and I said, "Well, okay," and so I kept calling him back, and David would call me. David Harris is the gentleman's name. Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful producer. And he, it was like this, like a couple of years or so. And finally I said, okay, you know, he said, I really want to record some stuff. And I went down to his place. He was here in Southern California at the time. And we started noodling. And then he came up to my house and we started talking about songs. And I said, well, you know, I don't write a lot, but here's a couple. And then I started telling him stories about some of the songs that had sort of, I guess, influenced me or had an impact on my life or meant something. And I started telling the stories, and that really engaged him. And, of course, it engaged me.
Sure.
Because I have been asked to record over the years. And I've done some, you know, really, really interesting and wonderful CDs.
Yes, you have.
A few years ago, I did one called King for a Day, a tribute to Carole King, who was, of course, you know, is such an amazing writer, along with her partners and Jerry Goffin, of course. But I talked to David, and I told him these stories about these songs, and he really got very, very excited about that. And we decided at that point it was going to be sort of a scrapbook of a lot of my life, you know. In music, you know, songs that, like I say, you know, had some import into my life, and that's what it became. And the title song, of course, is Remember by Harry Nilsson, who was a dear, dear friend, and I was there when he recorded it, wrote it, and recorded it, and that became the title track. So that's it. Thanks a lot, guys.
It's good to see you. Thanks for coming.
Bye now.
I guess we should start with the first track, which is a cover of some band called The Beatles, did a song called Good Morning, Good Morning, and we'll let Mickey tell a little bit about the significance of this song.
You, my friend, were at one of the sessions for Sgt. Pepper, seminal rock and roll album by The Beatles, and chose to
Whatever
record...
Whatever happened to that album? It was so good, and it just disappeared off the face of the earth.
Oh, no, it hasn't.
I could never figure that out, how that album didn't take... No. Yes, I was blessed. I went to England on a press junket, actually, and I met Paul McCartney. We had sort of a press op, and he was very gracious. We had dinner, and we hung out, and he says, you want to come down and hear us? We're recording a new album, Sergeant Something, you know. And I'm like such a Beatle fan. I had my autograph book in my pocket, and I was like, I was just in awe. No, actually, I was in London, but it's near.
It's right outside of
Awe.
A couple miles away.
And so he invited me down to this session at Abbey Road Studios, this new album they were working on. And I don't know what I expected, I guess, you know, some sort of freak-out Beatle mania, psycho-jello, fun-fest, love-in, be-in thing. So I got dressed up accordingly in my tie-dyed underwear and my paisley bell-bottoms and my hair up in curlers and glasses and, you know, three sheets to the wind. And in the middle of the day, this is 2 o'clock in the afternoon, the limo picks me up and brings me down to Abbey Road, and I walk in, you know, ready to party, and it looks like my high school gymnasium. It's fluorescent lighting, just the four guys in t-shirts and jeans, just sitting there playing. And I'm like, where are the girls? I look like a cross between Charlie Manson and Ronald McDonald. It's just like ridiculous. And I remember to this day, and John Lennon looks up at me and he says, you want to hear? He says, hey, monkey man. That's what he called me, Monkey Man. Hey, Monkey Man, you want to hear what we're working on? And I'm like trying to be so cool. I'm such an idiot. And I'm going like, oh, yeah, man, far out, dude. Yeah, it's cool, man, far out. And he points up to George Martin, I'll never forget, up in the booth, and he's wearing a three-piece suit and in the middle of the day, and he pushes a button on a four-track tape recorder, and I hear the tracks to Good Morning, Good Morning. And, of course, that was burned into my brain forever after. I got back to the States and I was directing and wrote and directed an episode of The Monkees. And I said, I really want to get that song on The Monkee episode. And I don't know who called who. I might have called Paul. I don't remember. And they gave us the rights to that song. And it's on a Monkey episode. And to my knowledge, it's the first time they had ever let anything go like that. This is 69, you know, 68,
yeah.
69.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it remained. It burned into my brain. And when I told David Harris that story, he said, yeah, but we can't do it like the original. And I said, no, of course not. But I have this version that I've been arranging and screwing around with for a long, long time. And here it is.
Nothing to do to save his life, called his wife in. Nothing to say, what a day has your boy been. Nothing to do, it's up to you. I got nothing to say, but it's okay. Going to work, don't wanna go, feeling low down. Heading for home, to start to roam, now you're in town. Everybody knows there's nothing to do. Everything is closed, it's like a room. Everyone you see is half asleep. You're on your own, you're in the street.
So Mickey gets a lot of traction with that story. I'm at the age where I have my greatest hits of stories, too, about my life. So I know if somebody at least wants to talk to him. So there you go. So, Jeff Hewlett, I know that you really like this one, so I'm going to let you start it off.
You're right, I do, and I'll preface this by saying that, you know, I think we've said this before, the Beatles are one of my most favorite bands of all time, and I'm extremely picky about Beatles covers, so, I mean, I've dismissed a great many Beatles covers that I thought were not done well or didn't respect the source material, but I was really surprised. I was skeptical when I saw that this track was on the album, and when I listened to it, I was very pleasantly surprised at how nicely he treated the material and what a great take he did on it. And it's kind of a mellow version. The original is much more rambunctious, I guess. So a lot more, you know, sound effects are in there. You got the rooster crowing and other things, and Mickey's take on it is much more downbeat. And it goes in a completely different direction, which I think is a good move on Mickey's part. I think it's a great take on the song from a vocal perspective. And it's nice. The acoustic guitar throughout is really, really nice and pleasant to listen to. So I think this is close to one of my favorite tracks on this album as a whole.
Sarah, your thoughts?
I actually, this afternoon, decided to listen to the two of them back and back. I broke out Sgt. Pepper's, and then I listened to this one right after, which is something I hadn't actually done before. And I agree with a lot of what Jeff says. I think Mickey did a really smart thing in kind of taking the song in a different direction, kind of a more mellowed, I guess mature is a good way to describe it. It's a very mature take on the song, and I really enjoy it. It is about my third or fourth favorite on the track, on the album, and it's very mellow, and it's good. Yeah.
Craig Cohen.
When you're putting an album together, track sequencing is possibly a lost art, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that this is an excellent opener for this album, because for me, it sort of is an indicator of what's to come in terms of his approach to cover songs. It's a great showcase for the production, the overall sound of the album. Mickey's voice is just in tremendous shape, so you get any of those concerns right out of the way. And, you know, how can I not love a song that's got like that cool, like, flute solo that goes on in the middle of it?
Mm-hmm. I agree totally with everything you just said. It really sets the tone for the album, and yeah.
I love this one, and to me it's like Good Morning a la Simon and Garfunkel's Mrs. Robinson. There's kind of a tapping and that same kind of acoustic feel to it, you know, except it's Good Morning, Good Morning, of course.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I can I can see that.
And the personnel on the album, Phil Keaggy plays acoustic guitar, and he's just an amazing artist. Anybody that listens to Phil Keaggy, the guy can do no wrong, and it's another fine example. He plays on a lot of the album. Mickey's vocals are excellent, as you mentioned, and there's not many guys that have been through the years that really can hold up like this. I can't think of many. Robin Zander's one of them. Who else? Anyone? Anyone?
Not living, sadly.
Well, Mike's actually doing pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty much limited company. The years do take their toll, and Mickey seems to have lost absolutely nothing. As a matter of fact, he may have gained some things. Time and experience.
I almost wonder how much of that is tied to the amount of true, like, road work that somebody does.
Well, and he said that. He said that part of the reason that his voice has stood up relatively well, he said this in interviews, is that he basically didn't sing for about 10, 15 years after the Monkees. And he says that's a big part of why he kind of was able to preserve his voice. The other thing is when he started going on Broadway more and he finally got some formal voice training, he says he sings better now than he did in the 60s. And frankly, I think I agree, certainly from a technical standpoint.
Yeah, I won't argue with him there.
He blames some of that on the theater. So there you go. Or credits that. Credits that to the theater.
Yes.
Sorry about that. Blame credit.
It's okay. He sometimes gets a little overly theatrical, I think, but we'll probably get to that in a bit. So.
Okay. Well, let's go on to... Is that a clue for the next song, Sarah?
Let's see.
And now your thoughts, Craig Smith, on Mickey's cover of Good Morning, Good Morning.
I have a little bit of difficulty with this one. I don't know if it's the arrangement. I don't know if it's the omission of the chorus, but it just doesn't click with me. The one thing I do appreciate is Mickey taking the arrangement and making it his own, whether it's through him or, you know, the musicians, however it happened, you know, whatever. Having said that, it's an arrangement that, even though different and I can appreciate it, I'm not sure that it works. Maybe it's because I'm such a fan of the original. I think that the original is flawless. So it's a tough one to try to conquer. So for me, it's not necessarily a win.
And now we are going on to track two, just an old-fashioned love song. And, of course, it's another cover. And, Mr. Craig Smith, why don't you take lead on this one?
Three Dog Night cover.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a tremendous fan of the original. It's I'm not sure what the impetus was to cover this. I know that Mickey was wont to do songs that meant something to him personally.
Right.
So maybe somebody can speak to that. I do enjoy the scat bit in it. I thought that was pretty cool, but I just think the song itself is slight, and that is nothing to do with Mickey's take on it. It's just that it's never been a favorite of mine. Is somebody not a fan?
Oh, it's cute. It has its moments.
Sarah Clark, take it.
Well, on an old-fashioned love song, I do kind of like the original version. I thought this cover was okay. I didn't think he really did anything creative with it. Again, other than the scat bit in the middle, which I thought was just awesome because I enjoyed that. I basically, whenever Mickey Dolenz does the scat thing, it's kind of cute. So, but yeah, I thought it was okay. From what I understand, this is a song that he was offered during the Monkees days and then turned it down or didn't get to it in time or something, and it became a hit for somebody else.
Well, actually, here's the story. Mickey writes, "This is one of the songs from my audio scrapbook that goes under the heading Songs I Should Have Done But I Didn't. The year must have been 1970 when I was sent a demo of this wonderful Paul Williams song. I really liked it and started playing around with the arrangement of it in my home studio. However, as I was lazing about in my Laurel Canyon home, dipping in and out of my black-bottomed swimming pool, dipping in and out of my shag-carpeted studio, Three Dog Night got a hold of the song, and whammo, number 4 in the Billboard Top 100. Mm. As they say, you snooze, you lose. So, 41 years later, he decided to revisit it. Craig Cohen.
This is another song that I really, really like. It's got a really cool groove to it. It's got like a New Orleans thing going on, which anytime I can think back to my time that I visited that city, There's always good memories attached, and this song sort of makes me think of that place. I think the background vocals on this track are really good. They have like a horn-like quality to me, and of course, the scat singing that's been mentioned. I really enjoy. He gets really deep with that scat singing at one point, which is kind of neat. You know, when people go that direction with their scat.
Jeff.
Well, I'm on the same wavelength with Craig Smith on this. I'm not a huge fan of the original song, so I think that kind of tipped the scales for me when I was listening to this. Although, I do find it to be a very interesting take on the song. It's kind of got a jaunty feel. I did enjoy the layered vocals, especially in the skiffle part of this song and in the background vocals. So it's a unique take on the original, but I'm not a huge fan of the song itself.
Mickey also says that he particularly loves the scatting bit in the middle. It was undoubtedly inspired by his mother's old Cab Calloway records. So there you go. Well, let's listen to a little bit of that right now.
Just an old-fashioned love song.
And also on this track, an old-fashioned love song, Vicki Peterson of the Bangles plays something called a banjitar. Has anyone ever seen a banjitar?
No, but I like it.
Yeah.
I think I like it already, yes.
A banjitar, as opposed to a, what is it, what would it be, a gitcho?
Yes.
The opposite, a gitcho would be the opposite of a banjitar, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, that joke went nowhere. Anyway.
I think a banjitar is just a six-string banjo, really built for guitar players.
Or Vicki Peterson.
Or Vicki Peterson.
Okay, our next song is Diary, written by Mr. David Gates, who provided a song on the first album. Anybody remember what song he wrote on the Monkees album?
Saturday's Child.
There you go.
Yep.
2 points for you. There you go. You'll be able to reimburse those points to get Ken bucks down the road. You get 1,000 Ken bucks. No, it's a little office Dwight Schrute thing going on there. Anyway, Mr. David Gates wrote this one, who is from the band Bread. And this is another one of those songs that was handed to Mickey. And he said, I'm not sure I should be doing a ballad. And then Bread had a big hit with it. So, Sarah Clark, you take lead on this one.
I'm not a huge fan of the song itself. It's okay. It's not great. I thought that the vocals on it were good, but I found that this one was really almost, at least in parts, it was like too layered. There were too many background voices and basically just too much stuff going on. I think they kind of put a little too much into it, if that makes sense.
Okay. Craig Cohen.
Yeah, it's funny. That's kind of the part of the song that I really dig is the how deep they got with the arrangement. I right off the bat, you got that mixture of like piano and synth, which is a really cool blending for me. I think this is another song that really showcases the great backing vocals on this album. Mm-hmm. And I think the production overall on this has a little bit more of a modern feel to it. The drums sort of pop a little bit more for me. And there's a lot going on in what I call like the loud section of the song that really makes this a song that I can listen to over and over again, trying to sort of decode what's going on.
Right. And it's got this really cool backward phrasing guitar every so often.
Yes.
And it's a pretty interesting effect. Mickey uses his acting skills to sell this song in a way that wasn't really there the first time. You know, it talks about... She read the diary and read about me. And then later, the music kind of gets to a point where it sounds like there's a conflict that comes out of this, and that at the end he comes to peace again. There's that one part musically where it sounds like it builds and it builds and it builds, and then he is kind of like resigned to the fact that this woman's going to be with him the rest of his life. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Craig Smith.
This one's a winner. I'm not tremendously familiar with the original. Actually, I'm not familiar with it at all. So this was a song I did not know. I think it's executed perfectly, and the arrangement's great. I was going to mention those backwards bits that you mentioned. I think that across the board, this one's great.
Jeff, your thoughts?
I think everybody so far has covered what I would have said, except for a couple of points. And I like the moodiness of this track, and there's some slightly dark places in this that I really enjoy. Yes. And something that really stood out to me, I have a very, very soft spot for singers who do their own background vocals and fill vocals, like guys like Todd Rundgren, who layer their own vocals around. And something that really stood out to me about this song is that, you know, this album came out in 2012, and it seems like the pervasive technology of the day is to auto-tune. And when you have a guy whose voice is so good you don't need to auto-tune, you can just rely on the old studio trickery, like double tracking and layering vocals. I think that really speaks a lot to the talent of the people who are making the track and the talent of the guy who's singing the track. And that was the part of this arrangement that really stuck out to me as I listened to it.
And again, the pedigree of the musicians on this, you got Vinnie Colaiuto from Frank Zappa's band, and Phil Keaggy once again. Just amazing stuff. Just amazing stuff. Well, let's listen to a little bit of this song now. She wouldn't shout. And as I go through my life, I will give to her my wife all the sweet things I can find. Found a diary underneath the tree and started reading about me. And I'm glad you all picked up on the darkness of the track, because if you listen to the Breads version, it's not really there.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. Okay, the next track is called Many Years. Craig Smith, your thoughts on Many Years?
Is this track an original? I was listening to the album on the train, and I was trying to look up liner notes.
Chris Eaton, David Harris, and Joseph Williams wrote this song.
Okay, yeah.
But I think it was an original that was brought to Mickey. Wasn't one of those guys involved with the production of the album, Ken?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, so a new track. I enjoyed this one. I don't know if there's much I can say to it. I think it's firmly planted in the middle in terms of, you know, greatness of tracks. But I don't know that there was anything particularly memorable that I could speak to. I did enjoy it, though.
Jeff Hewlett.
The opening guitar piece, I think, is a great pop riff. I love the fact that it's a little bit upbeat. So you had the previous track, which was a bit dark. And this is a great follow-up to bring you a little bit more up. And the refrain, I think, it sounds really great with the guitar riff worked in. There's some great breakdown with the vocal pieces that are very, very cool. I ranked this one pretty high on my scale when listening through this album.
Mr. Craig Cohen.
For me, this song is really about the guitar breaks throughout. And also, I think this is a really, really interesting melody line. And that's really the draw of this song, if you're looking for one, Craig Smith.
Sarah Clark, your thoughts?
I also enjoy the melody line on this, and it didn't grab me in the way some of the others do. And I like the lyric on it. It's kind of a sweet turn, and it's kind of sort of the flip side of the diary lyric. So it's an interesting placement of it in the album.
One of the gentlemen that wrote it is also one of the producers of the album, David Harris. Mickey says, and he was most single-handedly responsible for this project existing at all. It is, of course, very important to me. That and the fact that he was speaking about the song. That and the fact that it was written about David meeting Roxanne, the wonderful woman that was to become his wife, makes it even more special. What I love about the song, and I find this as I get older in life, you look at some love songs, like, for example, Wouldn't It Be Nice When We Are Older, you know, When you're in your 50s, you might not really want to think when we were older. When you're 20 or 15, you think about wanting to be older. But this is the thing that I like about this song is that it is a love song about an older couple, and you can kind of feel that lyrically and musically. But it's a very good track. Let's check out some of it.
Now there's so much to say, 'cause I want to get to know you. Winding down River Way, as we laugh and share, I feel my heart give way to you. There's a gentle breeze a-blowing, gentle breeze of love, and I find myself hoping there'll be many years for showing I love you.
Our next track is something that Monkees fans should be kind of familiar with, Sometime in the Morning, written by Gary Goffin and Carole King. Craig Cohen, will you take this one?
Sure thing. This song for me has like what I can best describe as like a 70s singer-songwriter type feel to it. I really like the percussion in this song, and either the lap steel or the pedal steel guitar. And I think the nylon string guitar solo is really kind of an interesting approach to that instrument. So those were really what stood out for that track for me.
Again, Phil Keaggy doing that. Just fantastic.
Wonderful.
Jeff Hewlett.
Oh, wow. This is the track that I'm the most worried about talking about with this crew. So I hope I'm articulate enough to be understood in where I'm coming from when I talk about this. So, Craig Smith, if you feel like hanging up until I get done with this, so you don't have to listen
why
to me
talk.
Well,
the level of respect, sir.
Yeah, the level of respect. So I love this song. I've always loved this song ever since I first heard it as a Monkees track. But I've always felt that the way this song was recorded and mastered and produced did not do it the justice that it deserved. I felt that the background vocals always felt overdriven. I felt that the instrumentation in the background always felt really compressed and constrained. Even in a stereo version, it sounded like I was listening to a mono version of the song cranked through some kind of crappy speakers.
And of course, you're saying this about the Monkees version.
The Monkees version, yeah. And even the remaster helped a little bit, but I never felt that this song could reach its absolute full potential just because of the way that it was originally produced. And I, not to say, I love this song. And I think Mickey's version on this track is, I actually went through and gave all of these a 1 to 5 rating, and this is the one I've rated a 5 of 5 on this Remember album. And I felt like Mickey treated this song the way it deserved to be treated on this album. It's a beautiful production. I love the way he harmonizes with himself. I think the guitar work is really, really great, and the mix is beautiful. The production is beautiful. And I'm glad to see, even the way past the song, when the time when the song was recorded originally, I'm glad to see that it finally gets the nod that it deserves and the treatment that it deserves.
Well, I can't disagree with you. I wrote "love it" in my notes, so there you go, Greg Smith.
I do understand what Jeff is saying about the production of the original Monkees version. And I think that's a problem. And I'm sure it'll be discussed when we get to more of the Monkees. It's a problem that a lot of the songs on that album suffered. They're just poorly bounced and mixed. But having said that, there's a charm to that version that I can't escape.
Right.
And yes, it does sound like the crappiest of mono mixes, but that's what I would be getting if I was watching the episode. So for me, that version has always, you know, that's always been one of my favorite tracks. And out of all the Monkees songs that I've heard so many times that I don't need to hear again, this is one that has never, ever, ever, ever lost its shine for me. So having said that, it's difficult for me to take a new arrangement. I think it's done well. I do like the guitar break. It's a beautiful song. Mickey does it, you know, does it justice, does it beautifully. But, and I wonder if the Monkees version wasn't there and if I hadn't heard that song, what I would think of this. But I can't separate it from the original.
Right.
So it suffers for that reason. It's not to say it's not done well or it's horrible, but it pales in comparison to the original for me.
Okay. Mickey equates this song as his Layla, whereas he's going to do many versions of it, for example.
because it was on the last solo album as well.
This is not the first time he's covered his own cover of a cover of a cover. So he's covering himself once again. Right. Sarah, your thoughts?
Well, I can't separate it, like he was just saying, from a Monkees song. And I also can't separate it from kind of, you know, I have a lot of kind of personal connection to this song, even relative to Monkees songs. What hits me in this track particularly, and some of the ones we've already talked about, the word maturity keeps coming to mind.
Yeah.
Mickey sings this song very differently than he did in the 60s in some ways, partially just because he's been singing it, you know, on and off for the last 30 years, because it's been a lot of the tours, and of course he's covered it many times. But also I think he just brings the maturity of the life experience that he has had since he was, you know, a 21-year-old pop star, and brings that into this revisiting of the song. And we were talking earlier about how he kind of acts out a lot of these songs. I could really sense that in this track particularly. For me, it is definitely one of the standouts on this album.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of this track right now.
And tell her all the things you never told her. Your love has shown me things I never thought I would see. I didn't know it could be done so easily. Now I know you're where it is for me. Sometime in the evening, you're sitting there by the...
Okay, our next song is Quiet Desperation. And this song was written by some guy named Mickey Dolenz, so I wonder how it made the album. Mickey writes, "I cannot tell a lie. The inspiration for this song is, of course, a quote from Henry David Thoreau. I can't even remember when I wrote this song, but I'm sure it was during one of my many periods of existential angst. Yes, even a monkey can have angst. It is typical of the type of song I have often written through, though seldom recorded. Maybe one day I'll sing an album entitled Monkees Sing the Blues." So there you go.
I thought Peter already did that.
Yeah, that's
good
true.
Point.
That's true. I almost wish that the production was a little more raw on this track. You know what I mean? It's almost too polished for me, for the lyrics, because the lyrics say one thing and the music almost sounds like something else. I don't know if that makes sense to anyone but me, but Sarah
totally does.
Sarah, your thoughts?
I like the vast majority of the songs that Mickey has written over the years. I think he doesn't get enough credit for his songwriting, just because he inevitably gets compared with this dude named, you know, Michael Nesmith, who you might have heard of once or twice.
Once
he wrote
a
song
or
two here and there. But I enjoyed this for what it is. I actually like sort of the contrast of kind of the kind of upbeat country vibe to it versus the tone of the lyrics. I think it makes for an interesting contrast, because that's kind of what he's saying, is you just got to keep going at it. So,
right. Jeff Hewlett.
Ken, while you were speaking your piece about this song, it was like you were reading the notes that I had written. So you said quite a bit of the things that I wanted to say about this. I think it makes for an interesting departure from the rest of the album, but for some reason, every time I've listened to this song, my mind keeps going, where's Mike Nesmith? It made me want to hear Mike singing this because of the arrangement. The lyrics are solid. I think Mickey's vocal performance is solid, but the Mickey doing country, for me, because of my love for the Monkees, it makes me want to hear Mike singing it. So it kind of turned me off a little bit, but maybe this was his way of giving a nod to Nesmith on this record.
Well, Mickey often says that he wants to do an album called Mickey Sings Mike, where he'd cover a bunch of Mike songs. So
I would listen to that album.
I would too.
Most men lead lives of quiet desperation, try to make ends meet and keep the love alive. Fight against all odds until the final curtain. Go away and find some place to cry.
Craig Smith.
Yeah, everything that I was thinking about this track has really been said already. The main thing being, you know, while I was listening to it, the whole time I was thinking about a Mike take on the song. To what you said about the production, I thought the same thing. I thought maybe something a little more raw to match what I wanted to hear would have been a little better. Not one of my favorites on the album.
Craig Cohen.
One of the things I really enjoyed about this is it's a country song that stays entirely country. It doesn't sort of dance around that genre. And I think the production sort of suits that. It very much sounds like a country song. And one of my favorite parts of it is sort of how Mickey adjusted his vocal style for this to sort of fit into that country vein. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that you guys all mentioned hearing Mike Nesmith. That's not something that I jumped to for whatever reason, and now I can't wait to go back and listen to that song
and think of it that way.
Yeah, sort of put my the alternate universe version through my head. I also think, again, the guitar work on this is great, and the organ on this song that hangs out in the background is just really, really tremendous.
I agree. The vocal arrangement was by Mickey Dolenz and David Harris, so there you go. I would have almost preferred a more rockabilly Carl Perkins kind of take on it.
Yeah, I think so.
I assumed that if we were flipping over the album, it would be now. So everybody, even though there's not an album here, let's get ready. Everyone, brace in your seat. Let's put your seat belts on. We're going to flip over side two. And we have arrived to another song that we are all familiar with. A little song called Randy Scouskit, written again by Mickey Dolenz.
Well, when I was in England and I was over there and I had the pleasure of meeting the Beatles, of course, and they threw us a party one night. I'm told I had a great time. But I went back to my hotel after and I started writing about my experiences over in London at the time. Meeting the Beatles and a lot of other people that were over at the time. I met the woman who was going to become my first wife. And I just started noodling in a kind of stream of consciousness thing, and it became this song called Randy Scouskit. And the title came from a television show I was watching as I was writing the tune. It was a show called Till Death Us Do Part, and it was the original English version of All in the Family.
That's right.
And the characters in the show, the father and the son, were having, you know, some argument. And the father called the young boy in England, the Rob Reiner character, a Randy Scouskit. And I just thought it was really funny.
Yeah. Say what?
Sorry.
Yeah, well, Randy Scouskit, yeah.
A Randy Scouskit. And I didn't know what it meant. But I went back and we recorded the song. And the record company said, we want to release that in England as a single. And I was like, cool. And they said, but you have to change the name. And I said, why? And they said, well, it's rude. It's dirty. And
not here, though.
Well, not here means nothing. And I said, what are you talking about? And they said, well, it means a horny Liverpudlian putz. And funnily enough, about 2 months ago, I get a FedEx envelope from Olivia Harrison, George's widow. Mm-hmm. And in it is the original letter. I don't know how George got it. She said, George got this letter from Derek Taylor. I don't know how they got it, but it's the original letter from the English publisher to the American producers of the Monkees saying, we want to release that song as a single, but we have to change the title because it's rude and the Monkees are, you know, white bread and they just can't be seen to be singing. So they said, you have to come up with an alternate title. And I did. And the song in England is called Alternate Title.
Who wants to take lead on this one?
10 out of 10 on this
10
one.
10 out of 10 on this one.
This was the one that, as I was listening, I was waiting for the cringe, and it never came. And in fact, the track got better and better and better. I loved the arrangement, loved the verse, and then I was sitting there thinking, how is he going to incorporate a loud, shouty chorus in? And he did it perfectly. It's moody, it brings, and I would never have thought that the song could excel in this way. And it does. This is the highlight of the album for me, 10 out of 10.
Jeff Hewlett.
I completely agree with Craig Smith. When I was narrowing my eyes when I saw this track in the track listing, thinking, how could he approach this on a solo record? And when I listened to it, I was blown away by the fact that he did a complete reversal. The original, of course, is very yelly, screamy. You know, you had the timpani drum going on. It was, you know, kind of out there in your face. And this is very subdued and very dark and very mellow. And I could not believe how well the song worked in this arrangement. You've got fantastic background and filler vocals again from Mickey. The build-ups to the chorus are incredible. And I think this format, for me, it parallels the original as far as I'm concerned. And I've listened to it at least 10 times by now, and every time I've been more and more impressed with it. So, you know, big, big props to Mickey for doing this in this way.
Sarah Clark.
Absolutely agreed to everything everybody else said. This is, bar none, my favorite track on the album. Kind of three words I wrote down while I was thinking about this song. The arrangement, just how the different arrangements just totally changes how this song is. The other thing I wrote down was maturity again. I know I mentioned this a couple of tracks ago, but when you think about the story of this song, I mean, Mickey wrote this right after his first trip to London and meeting the Beatles and meeting Samantha Just, the woman who'd become his first wife, and the song is in part about her and those whole experiences he had in the UK. As I know, a lot of us know that story, and it's like you're hearing this song resung by, I can't think of Mickey Dolenz as an old man, so an older man looking back, and there's just this note of, this is another song that he just acts so well, because there is just kind of this note of wistfulness and almost some regret in there, and yet it's just so potent and powerful. It's a song that I was amazed that he covered. It was actually the first thing I heard from the album. It was when I heard that there was going to be an album. And when I heard that song for the first time, I was like, okay, I have to own this. So,
very good. So I take it you like it?
Just a little bit.
Craig Cohen.
There's not a heck of a lot I can say that everybody else hasn't said already. In fact, looking at my notes here, I have moody with an exclamation point. And the word builds, which was talked about. So I think one thing I want to sort of, I guess, focus in on this song is, a lot of times when heritage artists or nostalgia acts or artists of a certain age, if you will, make new recordings, they have a tendency to maybe sound forced or like they're being put into a style that is trying to make them sound hip and relevant. This song is the perfect example of how to do that successfully, because the production on this track is so modern, but it doesn't sound forced. It sounds natural. It works for the song, and it proves that older artists can do, you know, modern forward-thinking music, and not sort of have it be their gimmick.
Right.
And that's what I really love about this album overall, is it has a very modern feel to it. And that's really surprising, because a lot of times artists aren't really given that opportunity.
I would agree with that. This isn't Mickey being a young man singing it. This is Mickey at his age singing it now. And the emphasis that he uses lyrically on things, like, for example, when he says, "It's not easy trying to tell her that I shortly have to leave," he lets that pause and drag out a bit. And you don't know whether he's being deceptive or mysterious, or he doesn't want to leave or whatever. But it's something that in the original version, it just comes and it goes real fast. This, there's a weight to his, to the way he delivers the lyrics. And you guys mentioned it building, and it just keeps building, and it goes to this crescendo that is not unlike, to me, the same mood that you hear from Hotel California. And by that I mean the lyrical weight of what you're hearing about. Like, for example, they stab it with their steely knives, but they just can't, you know. You guys all know the lyrics, so.
Mm-hmm.
But it has a very spooky, ethereal feel to it. And it's not something that you really think of when you think of Randy Scaskid. And I think that it's amazing how he's able to sell his song again at this age almost as a completely different track. I mean, if the lyrics weren't there, would you think it was that same song?
No, not at all.
If someone played you this and it had like scratch lyrics, you wouldn't think, well, gee, that's similar to Randy Scaskid. You wouldn't put that together at all. So kudos to whoever came up with this arrangement. Kudos to whoever made this happen. And the band excels on this track. The production is great. There's not one bad thing I can say about it. Personally, if anybody has much to say bad about it, it's that it's not the original version. And nothing can be ever again. And the fretless bass by Mr. Bob Birch is fantastic. The drums by Vinny Colaiuto, just amazing guitar. Phil Keaggy again with Chris Pinnock on guitar. David Harris on keyboards. Electric guitar, tambourine programming. And see, they miss Davey. They need it. Mm-hmm. Instead of a tambourine programmer. So there you go. So I personally, this is one of my favorite songs on the album.
She's a wonderful lady, and she's mine, all mine. And there doesn't seem a way that she won't come and lose my mind. It's too easy humming songs to a girl in yellow dress. Been a long time since the party, and the room is in a mess. The four kings of EMI are sitting stately on the floor. There are birds out on the sidewalk and a valet at the door. He reminds me of a penguin with few and plastered hair. The talcum powder on the letter and the birthday boy is there.
Track, Craig Cohen, you seem to like this one. It's Johnny B. Goode, written by Mr. Chuck Berry.
I think the main thing I respect about this song is how unique of an arrangement it is. You're taking an iconic song that has an iconic guitar riff, and you're not giving us that guitar riff, but the song still works. It kind of has like an Elvis feel to me in the verse. And I just really like the arrangement that they went with on this song. And I'm of the opinion that a good song is a good song, you know, production be damned, or arrangement be damned in some cases. And this is proof of that. This is a song I really, really enjoy. And like I said, it might be based on the fact that they didn't fall back on that, you know, that riff that everybody expects.
Sarah Clark.
I love the original, obviously. And I thought this was an interesting take on it. And I agree that it was an intriguing idea to take out the famous guitar riff and to give it a much more, I guess a good way to say it is much more laid back arrangement. But I almost found it a little too laid back, a little, I don't know, kind of some of the urgency of the original version of the song was lost for me. I still think it's a good cover. I just, that was something that I felt was missing a little bit.
Jeff Hewlett?
I hate to put myself out there like that, but I was never really a huge fan of the original. It's probably
Amen.
A terrible thing to say. Oh, I feel a little bit more vindicated now. But I never really enjoyed the original very much. And I think the Marty McFly cover is probably the best one I've heard.
Thanks for taking that from me.
No, oh, sorry, man.
It's all right.
We're going to let you use it anyway, Craig.
But in Mickey's defense, I think this rendition is really good. I will reiterate the comment about the big guitar riff being absent from this. I think that's really a bold move. I mean, you've got a song that pretty much everybody recognizes for that guitar riff, and you know, Mickey opts to take it out. And I think that's great. It gives the song a very cool character, and maybe to coin a phrase, maybe it's Mickey-ized. I'm not sure how to approach it, but as a guy who doesn't really care for the original, I think this version is a good rendition of it, but it wasn't a high point for me.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of that right now.
Well, down Louisiana, down New Orleans, back then it was among the Evergreens. There's a fine log and made of oak and wood. There's a country boy named Johnny B. Good, who never ever learned to read or write so well, but he can play guitar just like a rhythm.
Well, yeah, that's very special, very, very a special song to me, because that, Johnny B. Goode, was my audition piece for the Monkees. Just not amazing. That version. This is the one I came up with, this version, over the years, just kind of noodling around with it. But I did it as in the original version for my audition piece for the Monkees. That's the song that got me the gig.
Craig Smith, please tell us your thoughts on this track.
I'm going to say it anyway. If you're going to cover this track, you better be Marty McFly and have a time machine. The original does nothing for me either. I know it is an iconic rock and roll track, and that's sacrilege. But I just have a problem with, like, 1-4-5 songs that share that same kind of progression. Uh-huh. And it's just something that irks me. So when I saw it in the track listing, I wasn't excited for it. When I heard it, my mind wasn't changed. So, yeah, I'm not trying to be particularly out to get this track, but it's I don't get it.
I understand. Well,
cheers.
It's definitely not the worst cover of Johnny B. Goode ever. That was had to be Judas Priest did a cover of it in 1988.
I'll seek that out.
I never heard that.
Yeah, I remember that. It's bad. There was a
video. They made a video for it too.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. There was a video. Ooh. What was there was a movie that was from.
Wasn't there a movie called Johnny B. Goode?
It might have been. I know that the guy from Weird Science was in it.
Anthony Michael Hall.
Yes, because he's in the video. They show him in the video. I'm trying to remember who it was from, but yeah, to me that's the worst, as far as I'm concerned. You think about Judas Priest. You do not think about the covering Chuck Berry.
No.
Anyhow, Monkey fans are like, what's this got to do with anything? So, I apologize. Mickey has a reason that he did this song. And back when he was in a band called The Missing Links, he would perform this song. It's kind of strange he wound up with the Monkees that was in a band called The Missing Links, but this was the song that he did for the audition for the Monkees TV show. So this was the
it
song.
Might have sounded better there.
Yeah, yeah. Probably a little more up-tempo, and Mickey plays guitar on this track, so there you go. Our next song is Sugar Sugar.
Mm.
David Harris encouraged Mickey to do this, and he said no, but after he heard the arrangement that David wanted to do, he thought about it. And this song has a bit of Monkees history. Anybody want to tell the story?
Sure, yeah. I can take it.
Okay, go for it.
So this was originally going to be one of the, I guess, what, the follow-up single to I'm a Believer?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That was being pushed by Kirshner. And everybody else wasn't too keen on it, so he took his ball and brought it to the Archies.
Yep. This was the song that started the hostile revolution? Takeover. Yeah, the revolution of the Monkees. Mm. This is the
wasn't
one...
the rumor that Nesmith put his fist through a wall?
Yes,
because he didn't want to do this?
Yeah, but prior rumor. To that... No, it really
no,
happened.
No, he put his fist through that wall.
Yeah. Mike said, we're not going to do that piece of junk, Sugar Sugar. Too bubblegum, too sappy, too pop. I'm not going to say, you know, Sugar Sugar, you're my candy girl, you know? And I don't blame for Herb to saying, hey, fellas, you want to get cute with us? We have a contract. We can kick you out of the studio. We'll use four other guys. Don't tell me what you're going to do.
The contract. Let me see that.
He wagged the contract at me. And he said, well, you've got a contract, and this is the contract that you've got. And I smashed my fist through the wall. I said, yeah, well, that could have been your face, but...
Mike put his fist through a wall, which he really did. He actually, it's only chalkboard in California. And he said to this lawyer guy, if I'm not mistaken, he said, that could have been your face.
It is rumored that that story is not necessarily true and that the song offered was a song called Sugar Man. There are conflicting stories. Andrew Sandoval, I believe, has said that he believes it was Sugar Man. And that the story has kind of become Sugar Sugar, and now it's kind of the story that's been propagated all these years and has become the story.
Right.
Oh, wow.
If you look up the Sugar Sugar on Wikipedia, I think it goes into that.
So this song is said to have been earlier offered to the Monkees, although songwriter Jeff Barry denies this. Don Kirshner said that Mike Nesmith put his fist through a wall of the Beverly Hills Hotel refusing to do Sugar Sugar. However, Monkees archival expert Andrew Sandoval has suggested that the band may instead have actually been offered the tune called Sugar Man. But with the passage of time, the parties involved simply misremembered this as being Sugar Sugar, in large part because it became a better anecdote. Peter Tork stated on an interview that they were indeed offered Sugar Man.
Craig Smith, your thoughts on this one?
Vile.
Ouch.
Just, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I never had anything for this song to begin with.
Right.
And just the whole like laughing bits at the end and all that, it verges on a little too much silly for me for an album that is kind of, you know, the gist I'm getting from this album is it's more grown up and it's mature, Mickey. And, you know, we spoke to that at length during Randy Scouse Git.
Right.
So this kind of just, it seems trite. It just seems kind of banal and insipid.
You love that phrase.
I'm going to use it every episode if I can.
Excellent phrase.
That's a great phrase. This one definitely goes on way too long.
Agreed.
And I would have rather heard this kind of arrangement with Leon Redbone. And you know,
can you do an imitation of that for us?
Sugar, sugar, ah, honey, honey.
Sounds like Mr. Belvedere to me.
You know what? The interesting thing about this in comparison to Johnny B. Goode is it does the same thing. It holds back that riff, but at the end, they give it to you on the piano.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like how he doubles his voice during the bridge, though. This song is so sweet and syrupy that I feel like I'm going to be a diabetic from one listen. So,
yep.
As a matter of fact, if I had to remove one song from the album, it might be this one.
Nice.
I'd probably agree.
I agree.
Because the song, the album has been so incredibly strong up till basically track 8. Then it's kind of like the side 1, side 2 thing, where usually side 1's the best side, you know what I'm saying? And then side 2 is usually the, like, we just got to get to the finishing line, folks. And so
it's unfortunate that you have these two songs in a row.
Yes.
And that really hurts the second half of the album for me.
Well, let me ask you this. If instead of Sometime in the Morning, we would have got Johnny Be Good there and then bumped that down, you know, just bumped all the tracks down, do you think that that would have helped fill the album out a little bit more?
Probably would have, but it's I'd feel a lot better if those tracks weren't there at all.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it would be
a... In a row.
Yeah, that's true also. I mean, yeah, I mean, the whole album probably may do with a reshuffle. It might help it for me, but yeah, I don't know. I think it's the unfortunate thing of me just not liking these two songs, pre or post Mickey, and then the even more unfortunate thing where they have to come back to back on the album.
Can I speak up in Sugar Sugar's defense?
If you must, please do so.
The song is vile. I want to get that right out front. The song, I hate it. I hated it even before I heard the story, which is probably not true. The song stinks. However, I kind of like the comedic element of the song because, yes, it's a little goofy and over the top, and this is supposed to be the serious, mature, the serious, mature solo Mickey Dolenz album, and I understand all that. And I think, in general, that's great. But I think sort of what is being said in this song a little, in a way, is, you know, you can be a little silly and have fun, too. There's no contradiction between, delving into kind of those darker, more serious spaces like where we were in Randy Scow's Get, but you can also just kind of send up a really terrible pop song like Sugar Sugar. I thought of it as almost sort of a send-up or a satire of the song, and approaching it from that direction, I kind of enjoy it.
Yeah. I'm going to back you up there, Sarah.
I'll go for it.
When I got this album... This was the first track that I listened to. I saw the track and I said, I got to hear what Mickey did with this.
Yes.
And to expand on what you said, the thing I really like about this song and sort of its playful nature is if you listen to it from the verse to the chorus, it starts sort of laid back, almost like you're, you know, a little lazy or groggy and you need a little pick-me-up. You get some of that sugar. And then by the chorus, you've got a sugar rush going, and it's all big and bombastic, but then you have the crash, and you're back into the verse, rinse, repeat.
Oh, I love it.
I'm so glad I'm going last on this.
Okay, Joe.
I'm so glad I'm going last on this because it's going to end on a negative note, which is kind of what I think it deserves. I think this song is the very definition of bubblegum pop. And I think this version of it proves that the arrangement doesn't matter. The lyrics are still the definition of bubblegum, no matter how you slice it. Although a couple of positive notes on it, though, I think that Mickey did take it in a cool direction. I'm glad that he went a little more mellow with it. There's some great background stuff again, which I think he's been doing over and over and over again on this album.
Yeah,
When I was listening to this song and I saw that it was on the album, I immediately thought to myself, I wonder if he picked this or okayed this just because of that rumor, that anecdote about them originally rejecting the song as the Monkees.
Well, I would guarantee it.
Gaylene Marmasellus does the clarinets, and it's one of the strong parts of the song, if you ask me.
Sugar, oh, honey, honey, you are my candy girl, and you got me wanting you. Oh, sugar, sugar, you are my
Our next track, which is another Monkees song, or song that was done by the Monkees, Do Not Ask for Love.
When I saw that this was on the track list, it stood out because it is an unreleased Monkees track, and they dropped part of the title for this. So they dropped the prithy part of it, which I thought that the arrangement of this was pretty cool because he went a cappella on it, which is completely different than the original arrangements. If you look up some of the versions that the Monkees recorded, this is very, very, very different. I think it's really creative with the layering. Another great showcase for Mickey's voice. It lets it be very, very prominent. And this, to me, maybe if you compare it to the original arrangements and depending on your own tastes in music, this could be a better arrangement for the lyrics themselves. Maybe a better showcase for the overall feel of the song, depending on how you look at it. But not my favorite track on the album, but definitely a stronger one.
Craig Cohen.
I got to say that this song, if you were going to do any a cappella song on the album, this is the one to do. It's a really, really beautiful treatment of the song. This is another one of those songs where you can put the headphones on and just start analyzing all the different voices. The rhythm of this song is so tight. And I guess that's one of the benefits of harmonizing with yourself. I like what the higher register voices are doing. It almost has like a horn-like feel. And that's really the beauty of a cappella, is when you can start giving the feel of other instruments within your arrangement. This is a song that I've listened to a lot.
The song is written by Michael Murphy, who later went on to fame and fortune with Wildfire. Remember that tune?
Of course.
Mr. Craig Smith, your take on this one.
I think this is... I mean, obviously, this song has a very, very storied history in the Monkees story. That was a very convoluted sentence. But it was a song that they attempted several times. It featured in 33 and a third Revolutions per Monkey, and yet never saw the light of day on an album until our deluxe versions came out. So it's nice to see the song represented, as was said. Having a download of this and not having the credits, are all of the vocals on this, Mickey?
Yes, indeed they are.
What about the arrangement? Are there any arranging credits?
Arranged by David Harris and Mickey Dolenz.
Okay. While I was listening to it, I wanted to know that all of those vocals were Mickey. I feel even better about it now. It is masterfully arranged in terms of vocal, and I this is one that I actually repeated several times, and it's done so well, and Mickey sounds incredible on it, absolutely incredible, and the vocal arrangements are right on point, maybe just below Randy Scalskit in terms of awesomeness on this album.
I would agree. Sarah, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is one of my favorites for a lot of the reasons that have been said as far as the arrangement of it and just the layers. I think Mickey said his voice is tracked in this one like 50 times or some ridiculously huge number like that. And just the layers and the depth of it are amazing. I will say, though, that I'm not sure it's actually my favorite version of the song. I think I give that to Peter's version in 33 and a third, just because of the lyrics of the song. This song always to me sounded like, you know, it's a moody 20-year-old college sophomore sitting in their dorm room writing an overwrought poem because they just got dumped. And I don't know, it seems different. It seems like it works better for a younger man's voice than kind of the more mature vibe of the rest of the album, but maybe that's just me. But that's a minor quibble. It's still performed excellently, and I find myself humming this when I'm just going about my daily life. It's one of those ones that sticks in your head.
Mickey says that there are approximately 30 live vocal parts on this cut, and he does not know how in the world he would ever be able to do it live. So let's listen to Mickey singing with himself.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. And is it so once more thou art returning? Ooh.
Hast thou lost thy way as once before? I warn thee more than many times.
How I warn thee, how I more than warn thee.
I shall not be thy refuge once more.
Me free, then soon thou makest demands on me, and I am not thy love, thou workest in me slavery.
But I shan't hear thee as before. I prithee, do not ask for love.
The most challenging part for me was I did all the vocals, all of them, and including all the backgrounds, and I did them real time, doubling, electronic doubling. And there's one song, Prithee Do Not Ask for Love Once More, which is the a cappella tune, and I did 30 vocals on that one song.
That's all you?
All me.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, you heard that one? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've done all the vocals, all the backgrounds. And that was one of the decisions that I made early on. We talked about having background singers and stuff. I said, I really want to do this, And I channeled my friend Harry Nielsen, who also did all of his backgrounds. And and I said, I'm going to do all the backgrounds on this. Everything, all the leads, all the backgrounds. So they're tripled, doubled, tripled, quadrupled. And that one song, yeah, there's 40 vocals on that one song. Wow. All layered vocals. And in fact, at one point, we were going to call the CD Getting Layered. but we didn't. We went with Remember.
Our next track is another song that Monkey fans are probably kind of a little bit familiar with, something called I'm a Believer. Craig Cohen, your thoughts on this version?
I think this is a pretty faithful handling of the song. It maybe has a little bit of a Southern Fried feel to it with the guitar lines. But like I said earlier, a good song's a good song, and this is a good song.
Jeff Hewlett?
Cool take on the track. I like the smooth production. It's a very good, even ride from beginning to end. The word mature has been used quite a bit in this discussion. I think that applies well to this. It's a more mature approach, a little less rambunctious than the original. I really like the guitar arrangement and during the chorus parts of the song, but I'm not sure if this version fares well against the original for me.
Sarah?
I think it's another case a little bit similar to how I felt about Johnny Be Good. Is it has a little less of the energy of the original, and in some cases that works, but in this I think it could have used just a little bit more intensity. It's definitely very different than the original, but it's one of those songs, it's good, I enjoy it when it comes up on my iPod or whatever, but it's not... I'm not even sure I'd say it's my favorite cover of I'm a Believer, actually. But it's still very good for what it is.
Right.
What is your favorite cover, by the way?
Oh, I'm a sucker for the Shrek version. I'll admit it.
Smash Mouth.
Yeah, right. Hey, it's cute for what it is, and that was a sweet movie, so.
Hey now, you're a rock star. Get your game on. Go play.
Go play.
Craig Smith, your thoughts.
Give me the version of I'm a Believer with Julie Driscoll from 33 and a Third Revolutions Per Monkey, and then we'll be talking.
Mm, also good.
Yeah, that would be my go-to for this track. Pretty much what everybody said. I don't know that I have an issue with it being redone as much as I have an issue with it being so laid back. I think that, I don't know. I mean, I feel like, why does I'm a Believer need to be redone at all? I feel like it's put on there kind of as a selling point because it's a huge Monkey song. I don't think it needs to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I think it kind of lessens the album for that. I think it feels to me like an obvious grab. And something that I wanted to say about this album, I guess now would probably be the time to say it. I would probably rather prefer Mickey doing an album where he takes on the songs he wrote for the Monkees. So you have Randy Skouskit, but then you could also have Just a Game and... Mm-hmm. And Pillow Time and Midnight Train and things like that. And those are all songs that he wrote. And I think that given time put into those arrangements so many years later, even Mommy and Daddy and Shorty Blackwell. Like, I think that an album could be so much stronger with that material. And I'd like to hear a different take on something like that, because you don't, I mean, I'm a Believer comes with tons of expectations because it's such a huge single. So you can't win on a track like this. Right. And I don't know why you'd want to include it. You're not going to better it, and you're going to invite, I don't know if the way I want to say it is you're going to invite criticism by doing it, but it seems like a real easy grab to me. I don't think I'm a Believer should be here.
Mickey said that he laid down a vocal and acoustic guitar track and suggested a classic two-part bar band country vocal treatment. David filled out the tracks, and then they sent it to Phil Keaggy, and Phil did his arrangemental magic and came up with this very cool Everly Brothers groove. So kudos to Phil, he says. The one thing I find very interesting about this is there's a line that he says, and it's the way he delivers it that's different to me than the other versions of it. He says, "If only if I tried. If only if I tried."
Right.
And that changes the lyrics. That changes the meaning greatly. He's saying, "I can't get away from this chick." It's a whole different take on this song just by that one lyrical change. And amazing. Just amazing that he pulls that out of it. Mickey's got a lot on the ball. You know, a lot of people say Mike songwriter and Pete songwriter and so on and so forth, but Mickey is able to do so much, and that's, to me, that's just one of those things you can point at and go, wow, if there's anything that makes this version of this song, it's that take to me.
Up and I saw her face. I'm a believer. I heard the trace doubt in my mind. I'm in love. I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if I tried. I wonder if I tried.
One of the things I love on Remember, your brand new CD, is the way that on some songs you slow them down a little bit. Just made it sexy. We're going to play your version of I'm a Believer now.
Oh, cool.
Which is a totally different take than the Monkees song.
Yeah, it is. But I got to tell you, some of these songs, like actually I'm a Believer and Johnny Be Good, you know, I had these arrangements in my head. But the other ones, some of the others, like Remember, Randy Scousket, which you just played, these were the arrangements and the sensibility of David Harris, and I got to give him, you know, full credit. And some of the other ones, like The Diary, if we get to that, or you know, some of these other songs were definitely his influence, because we did decide early on, if we're going to cover tunes, and especially if I'm covering myself,
yeah, that's true.
Know, we're not, I can't do karaoke. So they got to have something different. And it's tough. Sometimes it's very tough to cover, especially a Beatle tune. Good Morning, Good Morning, which is the first tune on the album. The reason I did that is because that got stuck in my head for 30 odd years because I was at that session. But how do you redo? You know, very few attempts have been made even to redo a Beatle tune. Joe Cocker broke the ice. I mean, he's the one that first managed to go, wow, you can do these songs in a different way. But we did decide, David Harris and I, that we were going to try to approach these things. So I'm a Believer, which you're going to play, is a noodle that I just started doing years ago. I played the song a billion times, and then I just, my mom was from Austin, Texas, you know, I'm half a cowboy.
I'm a full cowboy. I'm from Dallas. So,
no yeah. kidding.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I'm Texan, and I'm on my mom's side Irish and American Indian, and on my dad's side Italian. So don't get me drunk, pissed off, and armed.
Hi, Zilch fans. This is Melanie Mitchell. Be sure to check out my book, Monkey Magic, a book about a TV show about a band. It's a lighthearted review and companion for the TV show that made the 60s fun. The paperback is available online from Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and the ebook can be bought anywhere that fine ebooks are sold. Check out the Monkey Magic Facebook page, follow me on Tumblr at bluemoonalto.tumblr.com, and listen for my contributions here on Zilch, a Monkees podcast.
This is the end of the album. It's called Remember. This song is written by Harry Nilsson and arranged by David Harris and Mickey Dolenz.
You chose that song by Harry Nilsson to record. Share why you chose that one.
He was a dear, dear friend. He had his first kind of big recording as a writer with us, the Monkees, called Cuddly Toy. And I remember very clearly him walking in the studio that day we were recording the album Headquarters. And he came in and the publisher said, this is a kid called Harry Nilsson. He, you know, we like his stuff. We'd like to have you listen to a couple of things. And at the time, Harry was working at a bank. And in Van Nuys, doing check clearance, you know, and writing songs on the side, trying to get a career going. And Davey listened to Cuddly Toy and said, I'll do that. Or rather, he said, I'll do that.
Yeah, right, of course.
And Harry told me a couple of years later, he said when he walked out of the recording studio, the publisher said to him, you can quit the bank. And then we just became friends. I don't know, you know, we started hanging out and we just hit it off. He was incredible talent, of course. You know, one of the few people I can say that I really think was a true genius. And became a very, very dear, dear friend. And I was there when he wrote, well, quite a few of the songs, but I was there when he wrote and recorded Remember, and I always loved it. And we were talking about David Harris, the producer, again, who, again, I cannot give enough credit to. He's responsible for this arrangement and this feeling and this tone. Because I was, in a way, some of these songs I was too close to be able to step back and like look at it with fresh eyes, but he did, and I think he did an incredible job. And Phil Keaggy's guitar part on this song is just phenomenal.
Craig Smith, would you take this one?
I think he does this one well. I'm a fairly big Nilsson fan. I do think it's kind of sweet, given the friendship that the two of them had, for Mickey to do a Nilsson song. It's a good way to end the album. I wouldn't say it's you know, up there with Pretty or Randy Skousgård, but he does it well, and it's a pleasant way to send the album off.
Jeff Hewlett.
Well, I'm going to deviate a little bit from Craig Smith. We've been pretty much together on all these songs up until this point, and the first note I have on this is all capital letters, the word great. I think this is fantastic. The lyrics are thought-provoking. I think the instrumentation and the arrangement are absolutely fabulous. Mickey's vocals are absolutely killer. Uh-huh. Production value, I think it's just about perfect. There's not much I would change about this, the production of this track. Incredible instrumental break in the middle. Solid soloing with some great vocal layering behind it, which is phenomenal. The trail out is excellent. It's a little bit longer, of course, and I'm a big sucker for long songs. I'm a fan of Pink Floyd, and Yes, so if you stretch it out a little bit more, you're probably going to win more points with me, so that wins a lot of points with me for that. Love the guitar noodling stuff on the way out there, and I this is one of the songs that I ranked a 5 out of 5 on this album.
Sarah?
I really agree with a lot of what Craig said, as far as I think the arrangement is excellent. I actually found it a little too long, but not very. I mean, I look at it and I see it 7 minutes 53 seconds. I wouldn't have thought that without just looking at the time on it. But you know, it is a very good song, and it's covered well. I wouldn't call it a 5-star, but I would call it probably the strongest of the 4 stars. And it's another one that Mickey really kind of brings his maturity to. And you can also sort of hear his friendship for Harry Nilsson in his performance of it, too. And it's just really a wonderful song.
Craig Cohen.
This was a song that midway through my first listen, my jaw was on the floor. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. This song takes you on an amazing, amazing journey. And much like I said, track listings are really important, or track sequencing. This is such a great way to end the album, because it really makes you feel like you've just gone through an entire sonic experience with Mickey. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot going on in the arrangement, but it doesn't sound cluttered, which is really, really hard to do. And the guitar break in this song is just utterly unreal.
I agree. It's a strong track. The one thing that I love about it, next time you listen to it, listen to Mickey's delivery, and he talks about drifting asleep and stuff like that. It's almost like he's trying to get you to pass out or go to sleep or go off with the song. Just check it out next time you're listening to it.
Remember is a place from long ago. Remember, filled with everything you know. Remember, when you're sad and feeling down. Remember, turn around. Remember, life is just a memory. Remember, close your eyes and you can see. Remember, think of all that life can be. Remember.
So I think that it's a pretty strong album overall. Would you recommend it to a Monkey fan?
Yes, I have recommended it to Monkey's fans.
Okay, Jeff?
I absolutely would. I think it's a very, very strong album from start to finish. There's nothing that I ranked, like a 1 out of 5. Even the songs that I didn't really care too much for, I still gave, like 2.5 stars to. So It's I think that it's a great, great record, and I think Monkey's fans would be very receptive.
Okay, watch this. This should be fun. Craig won. What do you think?
Obviously, that's Craig Smith.
No, you were here first. You have to be Craig One.
If you insist for today's episode, I will say I would recommend this to any music fan.
Yes.
Okay, Craig Smith.
Yeah, with a tinge of apprehension, only because I'm in contact with a lot of Monkees fans since I run maintain a Monkees website. There's a huge contingency of fans that are not into Pool It, not into Just Us, and
right.
Those are the kind of fans that will not take to an album like this. I would recommend it on the strength that it's a better listen than I thought it would be. Like I said, I approached it with a lot of apprehension, just given the fact that it's an album of many, many covers. But yeah, I think I would. That's a very, very long-winded answer for me to say yes, I would recommend it.
I would definitely recommend it. To me, it's great to kind of grow along with Mickey and go along with Mickey. And it's nice to have new music from somebody that we've been on this journey with, lo, these many years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool that we could share this with you along the digital waves here. So
yeah.
I want to thank everybody for listening today. And we want you to check out our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/group/ZilchMonkeyCast. So find us on Facebook and rate us on iTunes. You're rating us on iTunes. If you want to see this show continue, rate us on iTunes. It's the best thing you can do, and tell your friends. But the more you rate us on iTunes, the more iTunes will promote us, and that's a good thing. So we want to thank everybody who's been on the panel today. We want to thank you all for listening. And we are putting together some exciting stuff for you in the future. We're going to be doing some Monkey TV show episodes commentary that you can kind of watch along with it. And we've got some authors coming on the show. And this is going to be fun. So hang on and remember, always take some time to monkey around. You guys ready to do the here we come walking down the street thing? Ready? We bid you a fond adieu. Take some time to monkey around and
bloom.
Here we go,
walking down the street.
We get funny, just looks from everyone we meet.
Isn't that dumb?
And that's our show. Zilch is an online nonprofit Monkees audio fanzine made by fans for fans. Any samples of music or interviews heard remain property of their owners. We are not related to the Monkees or any of their members, past or present. We are not affiliated with Rhino or Ray Burke. If you hear anything you like from the band, go on Amazon or iTunes and buy it. If you enjoyed the show, like us on Facebook and rate us on iTunes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm your announcer, Chelsea Epstein, saying always take some time to monkey around.
Hey, Craig. It's the other Craig. Monkey man.
Hello?
Hello?
I think every time your dog barks, we should play, I'm going to buy me a dog.
I think it's going to have to happen.